Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Komen, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Klempire, with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times, and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Hopefully, Manny Chevrolet. Monday, hopefully. Welcome, Manny.
You got my vote.
Hey, man. Thank you.
Or future sheriff. We said that we were throwing that into the mix last week, you know, because there might be an opening over there, man. Holy cow.
Yeah. An opening? Yeah, well, about yay big or so?
Yeah. Just enough to squeeze through.
Yeah. Lots of laughs, that opening.
All right, right.
Yeah, they just, speaking of that, it was national news today when I was watching my prime newscast, the NBC there,
right.
And it was the top story. They caught three more guys.
Right, in Texas, somewhere around...
Two in Texas, one in Baton Rouge.
Oh, yes, okay.
And what I find hilarious is the two guys that are still out there, the one guy... is like so recognizable.
He's the guy with the face tattoo.
Right,
the
face tattoo.
Yeah, and they haven't caught him yet.
He's blending.
He's got
in.
One on his forehead and on each cheek, and that's the guy who's still out there. And I'm pulling for him. Man.
Yeah.
I'm going to pull for this guy. I don't know. He's escaped before.
He blends in well with, there are facial tattoos all over New Orleans.
Right.
You know, that made national news, and I'm those two guys. It's been 10 days now, I think, or something.
Yeah, 10 days.
10 days. So, I don't know what the over-under is.
Right.
I don't know. I think it's going to be 14.
Huh.
14, 15 is the over-under.
Because
I heard something today that there was a tip in Natchez.
On the tattoo guy. I did see that. Yeah,
guy.
Right. There, he'd been a possible
now,
sighting.
He's the guy who escaped from the juvenile prison, too, I think.
Huh.
That's easy.
Yeah, well, that's pretty
Everybody
easy.
Everybody escaped from there.
Well, it's easy to escape from OPP,
Apparently.
Apparently, it's very easy, But then there was this other guy who escaped in Arkansas, and he's still on the run.
Right.
This guy was the former chief of police in this small town in Arkansas, and he escaped disguised as a prison worker. He made some kind of costume that made him look
made
like
a
he
a fake uniform.
Yeah, like a fake uniform. And this guy, chief of police, he murdered somebody and raped somebody.
Oh, yeah.
That's
a bad apple.
I'm not rooting for him.
No.
But he's got a car, apparently, and they don't know where the hell he is.
Well, those guys they caught in Texas, I did notice as they were pulling them over, they had the body cam footage, and
right.
I thought, that's a much nicer car than I own.
Oh, well.
Much, much nicer.
Well, that's the thing. Did they steal it?
Yeah.
Or was it given to them
by
an accomplice?
Well, and then all these accomplices, they got about 10 of them in custody, and the bonds, the first couple, I haven't kept up with it, but the first couple of people that got arrested as accomplices had like a $1 million bond,
$2 million bond.
Crazy, man.
Yeah. And these are like grandmothers and grandfathers and stuff. They don't have that kind of money.
That seemed kind of like an excessive bond. I mean, the person's not going to offend again,
Well, that's it. But
they're sending a message.
I guess that's it.
Listen, let's say 10, 15 years from now, you got a grandkid who comes up and says, can you help me out? You're going to help him out.
Got to do it.
Yeah, you got to do it.
Wait, sorry.
Here's a few bucks. Go. Here's the car. I'll say it's in the shop.
Right.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Just go. You're going to do it.
Yeah.
I know.
What else are you going to do?
What else are you going to do? You're going to, you've got this kid coming up and saying, Nana, Papa,
Grandpa,
help me out.
Right. And then the facilities, again, back to that, that's the real crime that's revealed here.
Yeah.
Apparently, all this past weekend, they had the water turned off at OPP, now called, what is it now called?
OSP.
Maybe the Criminal Justice Center? Or that's a different one.
Yeah, I even wrote it down. Orleans Justice Center, OJC. Anyway, OJC.
Of course.
But so they had the water turned off most of the whole weekend, so people couldn't flush their toilets, couldn't wash their faces, couldn't brush their teeth. couldn't shower.
And the power went out all of a lot parts of the city, too. Did that have anything to do with it?
I think that was a separate, just coincidental kind of thing.
Well,
I think
that was
this
another
is,
thing. Was like,
that was a brownout. Yeah,
some kind of energy just turned off power because the grid was, you know, working
being
too
taxed
hard.
Or working right. too hard. Yeah, they didn't want it permanently hard. Damaged.
And it was funny because our friend Monica, who lives a few blocks from me, mm-hmm. she lost power on Sunday, but we had power.
Yeah, I didn't lose it up in this neighborhood.
But then apparently hundreds of thousands of people, and then apparently energy says this is going to happen more often. We're going to just have to shut down the power.
Wow.
Just because of the grid.
It's getting like Puerto Rico, man.
Well, yeah.
You have electricity
they
most
need
days.
Better squirrels. That's what they need.
Faster go squirrel, go. Squirrels.
Yeah, or feed them something else.
Yeah,
feed them
more meth.
Give them speed.
Yeah, more meth for the squirrels. Okay.
Yeah, right. More meth for the squirrels.
Seem to be coming to a meeting of the minds here at the Troubled Men podcast.
Yeah, they're escaped. I think the over-under is 15 days. We're at 10 days.
Okay.
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for them.
Right. Yeah. Well, you're rooting for the guy with the face tattoos.
I'm
the other,
for
the other
him.
Guy's a cold-blooded killer. Needs
well,
to
that guy,
needs to be locked up.
His,
for sure.
I don't know. I wasn't living here, but apparently in the early 90s, when crack was huge down here, there was a police officer who I've seen many shows about, who murdered all these people.
Well, Lynn Davis.
And right.
Lynn
and
Davis
this kid, the other guy who's out there. Yeah,
right.
That's his grandma.
Right.
So there's a connection.
Wait a sec.
There.
The guy that Lynn Davis killed is this guy's grandmother who escaped?
No. His grandson.
Lynn Davis, this is the grandson who's a convicted killer.
Okay.
But he was the grandson of the woman that Lynn Davis killed.
Yeah. Good times.
Yeah, well, it's New Orleans.
Welcome
you know,
to New Orleans. Have a nice day.
It's all connected.
No,
all
because
connected.
I saw. My wife said, you've got to watch this show. It was one of these crime shows. And she goes, I remember this so well.
Oh, yeah.
And I watched it, and I go, man, this police officer was just a brutal motherfucking fuck.
Oh, well, they had a whole,
it was a whole gang
of police officers,
yeah.
You know. It's
yeah,
like,
and I was like, I remember like my brother who lived here down there, and he was like going, I said, well, I want to come out and visit. He goes, no, don't come out here.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Not a good time. Not a good time to come out. Because crack was huge.
Yeah, no, we had record numbers of murders there.
Yeah,
in
that
the
it
90s.
Was like 95
yeah.
or
yep.
94.
Yeah, yeah, we were
like
close
that.
To 400 murders a year, you know?
Yeah.
Those are the official ones.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
The official count was over 400 those years.
Yeah.
Crazy.
They know about, you know.
Anyway.
Hey, what else is going on with you?
What else is going on? Well, you know, let's see. It's something I meant to talk about a couple of weeks ago. When I came back from that D.C. trip, you know, I had to go through TSA, you know, you go through the scanner, and I'm very good about taking everything out of my pockets, you know. Now, usually you can keep your belt on. It's not a problem. It's just kind of part of your clothing, you know. You take your shoes off. But so as I went through the scanner, they pulled me over to the side, and then they turn me around and show me on the little stick figure. Like sometimes if you leave like a, you know, something in your pocket,
right.
You know, a toothpick even, sometimes it'll show up as like a red square. So they show me, and it's a red square like right on my dick, like right in my crotch.
Oh, so you had a hard on?
And well, not yet, but I'm getting there. but I'm like, well, I don't. There's nothing, you know, that's not me in that spot. There's nothing I can take out of that spot to say, oh, well, here it's. And the guy's like, okay, well, I gotta patch you down. I'm like,
oh.
And he goes, do you want to go in a private room? I said, no, I'm gonna, I want you to.
No, as a matter of fact, I don't.
I want to see.
Yeah,
I want everybody to see what you're gonna do to me here.
Yeah.
So he proceeds to give me the most aggressive pat down that I've ever had in my whole life. Where, from the front, he's touching my dick. From the back, he's touching my dick.
Now he was trying to get a rise out of you. Probably,
the whole
right?
business, yeah. He was trying to, yeah. I don't know, get some. I don't know what you would call it there, but some close contact. But yeah.
Now, did you get his number?
Well, actually, I did get a nice note from him and some flowers. So.
okay.
He didn't buy you dinner?
No. Well, that's the thing. Maybe that's forthcoming.
So they didn't
hopefully.
Find anything.
No, there was nothing. No,
it was like a frozen pubic hair.
I ultimately said, well, you know, I have my belt, but the buckle it wasn't even in the front there, and it was quite far away. It's, I don't know. I think sometimes those things just. have a random, it just generates that just to
so see. I always take off my belt because I want my pants to fall down when I'm walking through. I always do that just to fuck with
kind
them.
Of the Tim Conway move.
Yeah, well, yeah, because it goes down to the ankles.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like walking like a, you know.
Because
like
you wear those loose pants, so they just drop right down. You got to shuffle along in your boxer shorts.
So fuck them.
It's hilarious. Yeah. Like, you know, you can, who doesn't want to see that?
Well, yeah. It hasn't gone viral yet. I haven't flown in a while, so.
Well, they don't let anybody have the cameras there, so.
Yeah.
You gotta do it, you know.
But I think because you were flying out of D.C., that's probably another reason why. Because, you know, that's the capital and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So they might have just been like, you know, we got to do this. You know, we
gotta touch this guy's dick. Yeah.
And then of course the rest of your band, the rest of your band is just staring at you like, come on, can we go? We're boarding in a few minutes.
That was the day we had 4 hours of extension.
Delay. Oh, so, because they can't land planes there, right?
No, they can't do anything.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I wanted to bring that up.
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, that's a good time.
You're sure you don't have a Prince Albert?
Guy, way back. That's way back.
Yeah, definitely do not.
Yeah. But, so what else is going on?
What else is going on? I'm about to take off for Hawaii.
There's a volcano blaring in Hawaii right now.
It's very active. In fact, I was booking an Airbnb in the town called Volcano, which is just a short drive away from that active volcano. And now it's kind of a, you know, a work vacation for me. And I got to say, you know, I've been on the work part of this trip probably 10 times or so, and that's always fine. The vacation part of it has been stressing me the fuck out, man.
Oh, and what island is this?
It's the Big Island, Hawaii.
Oh, the Big Island.
But, you know, just like having to make all these decisions, you know, usually I get to be baggage, you know, like they tell me where to go. As long as I show up there when I'm supposed to and do what I know how to do, I'm cool. Now, this vacation thing, it's a lot of unknowns, a lot of moving parts, you know, and you have the expectations. You want it to be good, right? So, I don't know. I have a hard time dealing with these things. What about you, man? You don't go on a lot of vacations.
No, growing up in Los Angeles, I never had a desire to go to Hawaii. There was no desire at all to go to Hawaii. Because I had the beach. I grew up with the beach.
Right.
I was like, why do I want
beach, sunshine. Yeah. You have palm trees in L.A.
Yeah, I have all that. And I remember in high school, I'd have, during like winter break or something like that, I have friends whose families would go to Hawaii and stuff like that. And I just said, why? You got everything right here. What, are you going to get more pineapple there?
Right.
You're going to get a pig on a stick? You know, pig on parallel bars. That's Mary Lou Retton. You know,
you could see that out at the beach, Muscle Beach, right?
Yeah,
right.
So anyway, no, I had no desire. I still have no desire. I like concrete under my feet.
Right.
See, I growing up in L.A., I used to love to go to the beach. I loved the water. But I never liked the sand.
Sand, right?
Yeah, sand is just—it's just like, what the fuck is? And thank goodness these places—you know—you go to Venice Beach, they have these showers where you can shower off and get it all off of you.
Get the sand off.
Yeah, get it all off of you. You know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
But then you got some homeless guy next to you who's taking a dump and stuff like that. Doesn't help. You know.
Yeah, he definitely needs a shower.
Yeah,
but he's not taking one. It's crazy.
No.
It's crazy. It's right
free.
There. They're free. Yeah, yeah.
He's a good guy.
Okay.
They were good guys, I guess.
Sure.
I don't know. But you know, we're all getting older. I don't know how old you are. What's your name again?
David,
yeah. We're all getting older.
There's no alternative.
My wife and I, you know, since the kids moved out and stuff, we notice, you know, we're in our 60s. We notice that sometimes we do some senior things, you know, where, you know, we put the ice in our glass and we put the soda, but we forget to put the vodka. You know, things like that, you know. or you know, we cook something and we forget about it. That kind of stuff happens. I saw a senior moment, and you always hear about, you know, dementia is a huge thing now for people.
Oh yeah, it's big. Yeah.
It's a big thing, you know. You gotta hear. They even have medication to avoid dementia. I just think it's called old age. I guess you just forget things.
Your brain gets crowded.
Yeah, it gets crowded, and you know, there's people in the brain that you want to get out, but they don't leave. You know? That kind of stuff. But anyway, I noticed I was at the supermarket yesterday because it was Memorial Day.
Yes.
So I had to buy something for the veterans out there.
Hmm, okay.
So I bought sushi. No. I don't know what that is. Anyway, I was in line, you know, our local market to. I see you there sometimes.
Yeah, I was there today.
They only have, there's like 20 registers, but there's only like six open at a time because they're so understaffed. And you know those, they have those machines at market where you bring your change.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Coinstar.
Coinstar. And they take about a 2% cut, right, or a 3% cut. So you get, you know, if you got a bunch of change, you get like 20.
That's what
bucks.
We used. That very machine is what we used when we got all the bag of loose change sent to us here. That machine at that
20
store.
Pound box.
You're right. Yeah. Yes. $12 of postage.
Yeah.
But go on.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm in line, you know, and I'm like I'm third back to being scanned and stuff. And I saw this guy. Probably, I would say, early 70s. Mm. I'm going to be generous and say he's early 70s.
Okay.
And he comes up to that Coinstar machine, and he's got this huge, like, gallon freezer bag filled with coins.
Right.
Filled with coins. And I'm watching this guy, and then I notice that the Coinstar, they put this huge piece of paper with huge type saying out of order. Out of order. But this old guy,
still trying to stop.
He's looking at the directions and he's pushing buttons and stuff like that. And then he actually lifts the flyer that says out of order and starts reading the instructions. He puts it down and then starts doing this and this again.
Uh-huh.
And he lifts up the flyer again that says out of order. And I'm laughing hysterically. But I'm so far back from him, I don't want to, like, say, hey!
Right.
It's out of order.
Yeah, it's not your place.
Well, he's got to learn on his own.
Yeah.
But then what happened was, so I guess he figured it out, or he just gave up. So he leaves with his cart, and I guess he goes shopping. So I get home with the groceries, and my wife said, well, you forgot something. Because we're doing some kind of grilling, and we needed ginger, and I forgot to get the ginger.
Uh-huh.
So I had to go back to the market to get the ginger. And when I'm going back to the produce section, I see that guy, and he's lost. He's just he's lost in the supermarket.
No,
no, but I was like, I was going to say, you know, it's out of order. You know, kind of. But he had groceries in his car, in his.
Okay, yeah. He was making some progress.
He was making some progress. So, you know, we're all going to be there one day.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, we're all going to be there one day. Lost in the supermarket.
Right.
You know.
And no longer shop happily.
Yeah, no, exactly. Came here for a special offer. Anyway, I thought that was hilarious and sad at the same time.
Yes.
But I love laughing at people's misery.
Well, you know, as we say in the Trouble Men podcast, we've said this from the very first episodes that, you know, if you can't laugh at your problems, we can.
Yeah, we can laugh at your problems. Exactly. I remember that. Yeah. That was like episode 4.
Yeah, yeah. One of my first little inventions.
Exactly. That's a credo right there.
Yeah.
All right, you want to introduce this guy?
Yeah. Let's get to our guest here. He's a terrific guest. Now, I will say this guest was booked originally for December 19th, I believe, and he was a last-minute, you know, it was kind of one of those weeks where we weren't sure if we're going to be able to do a show. Then we can. I called him day before, and he said, yeah, I can do it. And then day of, so I started to do notes on him kind of early that day because I had something to do in the afternoon. But like at noon, he texted and said, I actually have a little emergency I have to take care of. I'm going to have to beg off. I was like, okay, no problem. We got the great Clark Marty, America's Guest, came and filled in on last notice. And so when I was preparing to do the notes a couple of days ago, I said, well, let's see. Well, let me look at what the date that was. It's okay. It's December. I was like, okay, it must be the same notebook. So then I didn't have the stickum on here. I blindly reached into that area of the notebook and turned the page, and there was his name.
Oh.
So, with first try. It's like, and people say this is not a simulation, okay?
It's all real.
Anyway, so he's a terrific guest, an award-winning radio documentarian, a long-running WWOZ DJ with his own weekly Freaknologist Lunatic Kitchen Sink show every Tuesday at 10 p.m. In fact, I wonder, are you doing a show tonight?
I am doing a show
okay,
tonight.
Okay, all right. Well,
I'll be racing over there.
We'll get
after
the show on the road here. He's also written for such terrific publications as Oxford American Magazine, Downbeat, Offbeat, Gambit Weekly. Is also the one and only MC for the entire run of Jazz Fest, the great independent festival there during Jazz Fest that ran at the truck farm.
I have to say, I did miss one. I think I missed one of the last ones because my day job suddenly,
Okay, you're going to make a liar out of me for one. All right.
Just for one. We must be accurate.
Okay,
facts.
All right. Well, that's going to go out the window from here on.
Plus, Chris Lane will come up and punch me in the face.
Chris Lane. Okay. All right. Now, he's the missing link. Okay. That makes sense. All right. Well, without further ado, the great Mr. David Kunian. Welcome, David.
Thank you. Thank you. Pleasure to be here. Fan of your work.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
As we are of yours. You know, I often leave this, get done with the podcast, have my congratulatory post-podcast drink and wind up at my house where my wife always has your show going on. And
she has fine and discerning taste.
She does. Well, she loves to listen to the radio. She plays the radio all the time. Now, when I say plays the radio, does that sound old-timey? That sounds like something my grandmother would say. Anyway.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah,
but I think listen to the radio.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But like plays the radio. That's what I think sounds kind of old-timey. But I'm so amazed at how much music you know. How do you fucking know all this music, man? And I mean, I can't listen to that much music to even know all that stuff. And it's all great. And I'm just fucking overwhelmed at the kind of show you do, man. And that's just a small part of what you do.
Well, I mean, I've been reading about it and hanging out with musicians and interviewing them and stuff like that for years and years and years.
So are you from here?
I am not. I moved here in 1992. I'm originally from Boston, Massachusetts.
Well, actually, as I'm talking to you, I realize I left out a huge part of your introduction, which is that he is the curator of the New Orleans Jazz Museum at the Met, as well as the music curator for the Louisiana State Museum.
Yes.
Which is his day job.
That is my day job.
Night job. Now, have you been working at the Jazz Museum since it first became the Jazz Museum?
I've been working at the Jazz Museum since January 2016. The Jazz Museum was open from about 1985 until Katrina.
Okay.
And then they had to close it because Katrina ripped the roof off the Mint where it was. And also, at that point, they didn't have a music curator for the State Museum. The Jazz Museum is a part of the State Museum.
Okay.
So they didn't have a music curator, and it took them up until 2016 to hire one, and they hired me. So since then, I've been the curator and putting together the exhibits and putting the whole thing together with the help of the team.
At the old Mint, yeah.
At the Mint, yep.
Yeah. Now, what do you think about the penny? The penny is no longer. Because
I still have pennies and use them.
Yeah,
still
I don't think in our lifetime we're going to run out of pennies.
No, I think they could probably stop making them today.
Yeah, I think we'll still
you're still going to pull them out of your pocket and find them on the street.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, I just met a guy recently who he's from Canada. His name is Caleb, and he just got a 1-year internship at the Mint.
Okay, I think I know that guy. Yeah,
you know that kid.
Yeah,
He just moved here about a few weeks ago, and I met him a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I've met him a couple times.
I think you should fire him.
I'll tell him you said that.
Yeah, tell him I said that.
Say,
Manny Chevrolet brought you up last night. Yeah. Specifically.
You're done, kid. You're done.
Fired.
He said I should fire you.
Yeah. Anyway, he seems like Canada. Yeah. I like Canadians. They're okay.
Yeah, they're very polite.
They're funny people.
They're funny. Yeah. They have a comical
so
sense
Boston and you're into music in Boston or
yeah let's go back a little bit you're as Manny's saying you're not from New Orleans you grew up in Boston
I
proper
grew up in Boston, Massachusetts okay I grew up proper in Back Bay the okay. Prudential Center falls toward the Charles River the top of it misses my house by about 20 feet
now your parents academics or fishermen or somewhere in between.
My dad was an attorney.
Okay.
My mom still sells real estate.
Okay. So I could see all that.
Yeah.
To suckers.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a beautiful neighborhood, and lots of people want, you know.
I've only been to Boston twice, and both times I got in a fight.
That is not surprising.
Yeah,
it is a
very confrontational.
Confrontational
town.
Place where fights happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
Boston is not a place where people are particularly mellow. People are not mellow in Boston.
Okay, so you're growing up there now. Cunian, are you Armenian?
Eastern European.
Okay, right on. So that's a no to the Armenian.
That is a no to the Armenian.
Okay.
So how Eastern? Are you Russian Eastern?
Russian Eastern, Polish Eastern, German. A little, not quite as Eastern, but yeah.
Okay.
All right.
That's pretty easy.
Not beyond the pale, though.
Not beyond the pale.
All right. Gotcha. So you go to elementary school there, brothers and sisters.
One brother went to elementary school there, went to high school at boarding school.
You're a good kid. You're a kid that pays attention in class.
Yeah. Yeah, I got good grades when I was a kid.
Were you interested in music from an early age into the Beatles? Or you're younger than we are. So, what was the first kind of stuff that you were collecting? You remember the first records you were into?
My dad played cello for a while.
Oh,
he
okay.
listened to classical music. I took piano lessons when I was a kid. I wasn't particularly good at it. I wasn't bad, but people say to you these days, do you play the piano? And I say, yeah, but not in front of people.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, and I got the radio. Radio in Boston was excellent, still is excellent. A lot of obviously college stations and the commercial stations were great too.
It's not a big college town.
Not a big college town.
Yeah.
Well, it had a lot of great bands come out of Boston,
and
man.
Continued to like. I came up listening to. I mean, you know, the big ones were Boston. Aerosmith, the Jay Giles Band, which
Cars.
Is still one of my favorite. The Cars.
Yeah, Jay Giles Band, yeah.
Yeah. And then there was also a great jazz scene. There's a great punk rock scene, hardcore scene in there. So I came up, and all the hardcore bands would come through. So,
right.
Listening to the Jay Giles Band and also going to see the Circle Jerks and Black Flag at the All Ages shows kind of thing.
Right. So. And they also had like what they call Boston rock, right? Which is, now what is that?
Boston rock is a certain kind of... I want to say just kind of, for lack of a better term, working man's,
like pub rock,
pub rock kind of rock and roll.
Okay. Any Supreme Court justices that you went to school with? Or?
I did not go to school with any Supreme Court justices in high school. but my high school, both Bush presidents were graduates. I went to Phillips Academy, Andover.
Oh, okay.
Both
right.
Bush presidents were there.
What about any Kennedys?
Just that Skakel guy, huh?
No, not the Skakel guy, but Ted Kennedy's kid, whose name I can't remember offhand.
Okay.
But he was a class ahead of me. So
okay.
But
there's always good chowder.
Great chowder.
Do you like the red or the white?
Red chowder? What are you kidding me? What do you do? Put tomatoes in your gumbo? No, the white chowder.
The white chowder. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good chowder.
Yeah. I'm a white chowder guy.
Somehow you don't have the hard accent.
No, somehow I escaped that. I don't know how.
Yeah.
I can talk back and have the ads, but it's
the good high school. That's how I sound like I
now,
do. Yeah, yeah. It's Ben
now.
Franklin.
Right. Exactly.
Like that movie Departed, I remember they talked about Southies. Now, what's a Southie? Are you a Southie?
No. Southie is the neighborhood. It's the kind of, now it's gentrified like everything else, but it was the big Irish neighborhood.
Oh, okay.
You know, kind of south of, in the south part of Boston. So.
All right. Yeah.
So you graduate from this elite high school. You wind up going to Columbia University. Yep. Again, now are you involved in like student radio or
yes,
student newspaper?
I did the Columbia's radio station is one of the better jazz stations in New York, WKCR. So I started out there. You know, my freshman year, I want to say. So, you know, doing a 5 a.m. to 8:20 jazz show for a couple years, and then graduating to the 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. jazz show my last couple of years. So,
Are you playing? Just your favorites or certain?
I have a large, you know, I'm playing everything from Miles Davis to Sun Ra to the kind of out stuff. I like avant-garde jazz, which is, so I'm playing some of the out stuff, but also playing, you know, Stanley Turrentine and
some
Sonny
jazz
Rollins
makes me nervous when I listen to it. Does it make you nervous?
Depends
like
on
that psycho jazz stuff you hear.
That's some of the stuff I listen to.
Yeah,
doesn't make me nervous necessarily.
No, really?
It makes me exhilarated.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. No, it makes me nervous, some of that stuff.
Yeah.
But we can go on and on.
Sure,
about
sure.
It,
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, yeah. To each his own, you know.
Yeah,
that's the thing. Nobody, it's hard to predict how any kind of vibration is going to resonate with
yeah.
one person or another.
Because we all have our different resonating frequencies.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And for many interesting, you know, unknowable, ineffable reasons.
Yes.
It's fascinating. So at this point, what are you thinking you're going to be when you grow up?
No idea.
Okay.
No idea. I remember when at my graduation ceremony at Columbia, the thought of what I was going to do gave me an anxiety and panic attack.
Who was the commencement speaker?
Who was the commencement speaker?
Do you remember? Because we just got over commencements here in town.
It couldn't have been that memorable. I do remember that honorary degrees were given to Katharine Hepburn and Dizzy Gillespie.
Okay.
At my graduation.
Well, that's pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
That's psycho jazz there.
Love both
man.
Of those people, yeah. man. Katharine
yeah.
Hepburn.
Yeah.
Katharine Hepburn. She makes me nervous the way she
ooh,
talks.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She exhilarates me.
Oh, yeah. He's got a thing.
Yeah. Oh, so, yes, yes, I do.
So I did not know I wanted to be when I grow up, but my brother was at Tulane. I had come down. I'd been to Mardi Gras a few times. I had come down. Another one of my best friends who still lives here was living here. So I figured I didn't want to be in New York anymore. I figured I would come to New Orleans. I would, you know, do service industry and write poetry and hang out for a couple of years. And if it didn't work out, I'd move back to the East Coast.
Okay.
So
you did that? You got a job down on the docks?
I was a stevedore, yeah. Uh-huh. No, what happened was I worked at assorted restaurant jobs for a while in catering, and I kind of walked into WWOZ and started volunteering. And right about...
Now, what year is that?
That's about late September, early October 1992.
Okay.
Oh, wow. That's a while ago.
So, and I volunteered for a while, and at that point, WWOZ was only on for 21 hours a day. Their license was on, so they shut off at maybe 2 and started again at 5.
Mm.
But spring of 1993... the FCC gave them a 24-hour license. So immediately they needed folks who could do a 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. jazz show. Mm. And I immediately said, I'll do that. That sounds like fun.
Okay.
And, you know, I was you know, hanging out at night and, you know, hearing music and, you know, partying and stuff and working as a waiter for assorted horrible jobs. And was like, I could do that. And so I started doing the 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. show, which I did for... I don't know, probably 7 or 8 years, maybe.
And you're smoking lots of crack then, because that's when crack was big.
Just
no,
enough,
crack, not a lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, crack was big back then, but you know,
you were eating cracklin though,
yeah,
right?
Eating cracklin, but you know, as they said, crack is whack. So I really stayed away from it.
Okay, you heard that.
Yeah, I heard that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sound advice.
So yeah, and it was also the great thing was the 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. set was, there was no internet at that point, so nobody was listening. Like, nobody was listening. So I could really do whatever I want. And if I wanted to do, you know, 3 hours of Frank Zappa, or, you know, do play five Sun Ra tunes at once, I could do such things. And no one would be calling up, going, what are you doing?
All right.
And anyone who was calling up was not remembering it the next day.
Right. So. Okay. So you did that forever, and I noticed, just looking over your career, you like also, like Manny and I, you start something and you just keep doing it.
Yes. See how far it can take me.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I just can't quit anything, you know. It's like you have to fire me. Right. I'm not going of my own accord.
Yeah.
I'm too sentimental.
As I say, you could get me off the radio when you pry out of my cold, dead hands.
Right.
To quote Charlton Heston.
Yes.
The other thing that OZ did was they got a grant in the early 90s to train radio producers. And I applied for this and became and got trained to be a radio producer. So I started producing radio documentaries.
Now, who trained you? What did the training amount to?
Assorted... folks at OZ, and they also had a guy named Steve Rath, who's a fantastic radio producer out of New York, who came down to work with us. And there are a couple other folks. Damon Jacob, who's still there, helped train me.
Okay.
So when you say radio documentaries, what is that? Just a documentary?
It's kind of like a long form podcast, but from the 1990s.
Okay, so you're telling stories.
I'm documenting assorted New Orleans musicians.
Okay.
You know, at the first ones were 2 hours each, and then they moved on to kind of being an hour or a half hour.
These are usually dead musicians.
I tried to alternate between most of them were dead. I tried to alternate between some live ones. So the first one I did was on James Booker.
Okay.
And
now
then,
who is he? I don't know who
James Booker was. The greatest pianist you will ever hear in your life.
Oh, really? Better than Billy Joel?
Better than Billy Joel, I have to say.
As Dr. John said, the greatest gay, one-eyed, junky piano pullet genius that New Orleans ever had.
Yeah. James Booker was the greatest pianist you'll ever hear, and also,
I heard he's helping out those escaped convicts. Do you think that's true?
Certainly the spirit of him is.
Okay, yeah. Let's hope so.
And
now James Booker, he was in prison, right?
Yes, he was in prison for a little while, and I think he was in jail, not for too long, but every so often.
But he probably loved it.
I don't think he loved it, but you know, if he, you know, he did lots of drugs and drank, and occasionally would get himself into trouble.
But a genius, and we have recordings of his that documented, and people today, it's still, you know.
Yeah, people today are still, you know, listening to James Booker and processing him and dealing with him.
Right.
If you are going to play piano in New Orleans, you know, sooner or later you will have to deal with James Booker in the same way you have to deal with Professor Longhair.
Right.
You know, you have to get through that and figure out what he was doing. Even though most people won't be able to do it because it's that hard, but
right, you have to approach.
Now, you a Harry Connick Jr. fan?
I am.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I don't like him at all.
Why not?
I just think he's a pompous jerk. You know. Anyway, we're gonna have him on the show next week.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. I think that's a long shot, but who knows?
You never know.
Anything's possible.
Anyway.
So you're working there at OZ. You're getting trained. Now, man, just looking back, can you believe the progress that OZ from starting in those humble beginnings there to where they are now with under Beth Arroyo's?
Have you been to the new studio?
I have.
Okay,
yeah,
so you
times.
Know.
Yes, it's amazing.
I walk in there still, and we've had it now for 9 months to a year, I want to say, and still part of me is like, what is this? We don't deserve this.
Right.
The other part would be like, oh boy, do we deserve this.
Yeah.
We have worked very hard for this. So.
Now, is that Daryl Berger lined all that up? He's the owner of that building
he's the owner of that building, and OZ had to get out of the French Market building because it was in horrible shape, and they had to do repairs on it, and they had another place lined up, but it fell through, and I think Daryl kind of looked at Beth and said, "Hey, I have these, places." And I think he really wanted us, which is kind of bizarre because most of the places we have been, they haven't quite wanted us to be there.
Well, I think the whole thing is his community service to put y'all in there.
Yeah.
So shout out to him.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Daryl. And the first thing I realized when I walked in there for the first time is like, oh my goodness, I can walk through OZ and not, put my elbows out from my side and hit the walls with both elbows kind of thing. Right. The first time ever,
And sure. It doesn't stink.
No, it doesn't stink. It doesn't have mildew. It doesn't. Beautiful. I mean, I will say I really missed the OZ in Armstrong Park, just because Armstrong Park was a great spot, and it was in the midst of Treme back then, which is different from Treme now, but still it's Treme.
Right, but still just Congo just Square, it's Congo all right Square, there. It's a vortex.
It was where where we were broadcasting was before the park was there was where St. Claude was St. Claude and Dumaine, which as you know from the song is where you'll see the Zulu Queen.
It was
one of those spots. But this is a great place. The views are terrific. We have lots of room. It looks great.
It's fantastic. Well, this is so fascinating. We got so much more to talk about, but Manny, I'm looking at the drinks and
need to fill up here. Yeah. We'll be right back.
Down the road. Come on, Junko partner.
Back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet. I'm Renee Komen, back with our guest, Mr. David Kunian. And on the break there, Brother Dave Clements, the emperor of the Klempire, strolled in here, and he was chatting us up there. He's walking away now with an electric drill.
Because he doesn't know when to shut
electric up. Drill in his hand.
Yeah. Like any other movie star.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, yes, David, as a longtime listener, you know that the show operates without any commercial sponsorship. Not that we would reject it; it just hasn't been forthcoming. So we're still operating under a listener-sponsored model, and we have the Venmo link and the PayPal link there in the show notes of every show. And we have an old friend of mine who I didn't realize was a fan of the show, didn't realize was a member of the Troubled Nation, but shout out to Miss Margot Tasker, great jewelry designer and artist who bought all the cocktails tonight. So thank you, Margot.
Thank you.
And yes, be like Margot. You can get some skin in the game here if you're listening to the podcast.
Now, is she local?
Yeah. She, her kids went to school together. She's here. She had, she was out at the Jazz Fest at the craft tents out there, the artisan tents. And she's terrific. I might like to get her on the show, actually, now that I know she's kindly disposed to it. She'd be a good guest. A rare female who is enjoying the show. And she has...
It does happen.
She has triplets, so I'm sure she could handle us. she's got a thick skin. Anyway, so shout out to Margo Tasker. And, you know, you can find those notes, as I say, in the show notes of every show and the Facebook page. Also, look for the links to the Troubled Men podcast T-shirts. And those are live right now. You'll get them a little bit quicker. Also, we have the Patreon page, a handful of patrons who support us week in and week out. We love you. Thank you so much for your continued support. Also, what else? Follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to it. Helps us a lot. Costs you nothing. Give us 5 stars, something like that. Back to our guest, the great Mr. David Kunian. Now, David, yeah, you were saying that you had a Snake and Jake story.
Really? Yeah. Don't we all?
No, I would like to hear yours.
I was thinking this because I'm looking up at the photo over the bar of Griper, the late great,
right?
Who was a bartender here for a while. And Griper used to, every night when he came in, to start the night, he would pour a shot of Jack Daniels and put it on the end of the bar for Michael Ward, who you probably knew.
Sure.
At one point, I did a radio documentary on Michael Ward.
Wow, man, I got to hear that.
Yeah, no, it's
I love Michael, man.
Michael was a great dude.
Yeah, I knew him pretty well. Too well.
Didn't we all? And he was just a great catalyst for music and a great guy. So I figured, and it's one of those where, if you weren't around when he was running around, you might not get it in the same way that if you were, where it'll bring back a lot of the great things about the 1990s in New Orleans.
Right.
And I interviewed Elaine, the bartender here. I interviewed her here in the bar, talking about Michael and stuff. And at the end of every interview, I always get about 2 minutes of the sound of the room in case I'm doing editing and stuff. I need to add some silence. Mm-hmm. And I got this idea that underneath the entire documentary, the half-hour-long documentary on Michael Ward, I have looped those 2 minutes of silence as an extra track underneath everything.
But it's not silence, it's just the chatter of the bar.
Well, there was nobody else in here.
Oh, okay.
So, but you know,
gotcha.
You know, at 5 o'clock before they opened.
I gotcha.
And I realized one time when I was listening to it, you can't hear it, but I think it adds to the spirit of that if Michael Ward has a ghost, he's probably here.
Sure.
So underneath the entire kind of half-hour documentary is Michael Ward's ghost.
Okay.
So, yeah, that is my Snake and Jake story that I can say without incriminating.
Wasn't expecting the story to end like that, but okay.
Yeah, Michael Ward's ghost.
Ghost story.
Yeah, so.
Well, you know, in those days, you had Michael Ward and his running partners being Jun Yamagishi and Therrell DeCluet.
The great Therrell DeCluet and the great Jun Yamagishi. Yeah. Those crazy guys.
Three horsemen of the apocalypse.
Right. Look out when you see those guys coming.
Holy moly. Fun will
be had.
Holy moly. So you're working all those years at OZ. You start getting serious in some way. You go back to Tulane, get a degree. Is that when that happens?
Well, I had been funding all of these by grants from mainly the Arts Council of New Orleans and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities.
The funding the audio documentaries.
Uh-huh. And where right about, goodness, 2004 or so, I think there was the recession. Something happened that the grants started kind of drying up.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, what am I going to do? What are we doing next? And I knew that Tulane had a musicology degree. So I said, you know what? It's about time to kind of, I'll go back to school, get a degree in musicology and see what that can do. You know, maybe I can teach, maybe I'll get better grants. Who knows?
Right, right, right. Now you like being in school?
Yeah, I like being in school. It's fun. I like the graduate program was good.
Yeah.
Of course, what happened was my first day of classes was to be August 29th, 2005.
Okay.
For those of you who don't know what that date is, the 20th anniversary is coming up. That's the day Katrina hit. Mm-hmm. So, and all of the kind of sheet music and the music stuff in the library at Tulane was in the basement.
Oh, geez.
So all of that stuff got flooded out because Tulane got probably 7 feet of water, I want to say. So I kept trying and trying to, like, I've got to do, you know, let me back in. And they, everyone, as you remember, you know, was shocked. No one could deal with anything. Everyone was traumatized by what was going on, righteously so.
Right.
Tulane just said, we're canceling the musicology program. You know, I went, oh, okay, well, I guess I'm not getting my musicology degree. So I went back to making more documentaries, freelance, as I call it, freelance musicology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, writing stuff, you know, writing music articles, cultural articles, that kind of thing.
Now, all this writing, sorry, just to go back, is that you think Columbia, they must have trained you to be a good writer, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I'm not a great writer, but I'm a good writer. And
what's your undergrad in?
It was in history.
History, okay. Well, yeah, you got to do a lot of writing for that, right?
So then I continued doing that, and then I will not remember the year because year. Cause
that's okay. Doesn't matter.
But anyway, Tulane brought the musicology program back. And it happened to be being run by one of my best friends. Of course, it's New Orleans. That's the way it goes.
But sure.
When I heard about it, that was coming back, I immediately.
Nagin.
Matt Sacchini, even better.
Oh, okay.
Because
Nagin's a good friend of mine.
Is he?
Yeah.
Did you go visit him in jail?
What's that?
Did you go visit him in jail?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't want to get that.
Did you help him break out? Oh, he didn't break out.
He didn't break out, no.
But with all those facial tattoos, he probably would have gotten away with it. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's his kids. So, moving on.
So I call up Matt and say, I'm in. I want this back. And so Matt says, yeah, that shouldn't be a problem. So I started getting my musicology degree again in maybe 2000. I want to say it's 2008, 2009. And I finished class. Took me 2 years to finish classes, and another 2 years to do the thesis.
Now your thesis, it's on AFO Records, All for One Records,
and modern jazz. Harold Batiste, modern jazz in New Orleans.
Now you know Ellis Marsalis was a teacher of mine, and so I'm very familiar. Ellis was right there in the, you know, played on all those AFO records,
yeah,
along with James Black. Now, that's a very special time in modern jazz in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Talk about that a little
bit. Yeah. But it was modern jazz in New Orleans, especially the AFO guys. It was a special time, one, because they brought a certain kind of New Orleans sensibility to playing bebop and hard bop and all that kind of stuff, because the rhythms were a little more danceable. And there just was a kind of, you know, this a New Orleans flavor, whatever that is,
right,
but you
right,
can hear
right.
it in it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And also, especially Harold. Harold wanted to. He was, you know, he was a race man, and he wanted, you know, to promote, you know, black folk and stuff, and not get ripped off like everybody did.
Right.
So what they did was, you know, they put it together as a collective.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone kind of bought shares, and it was you know, everyone voted on what was going on and stuff. And it worked for a little while until they kind of got a little. They decided to move to Los Angeles to help, you know, to get a little closer to the business, and the collective didn't quite work out there in the same way. So a few of them moved back. Harold, I think, stayed.
The humidity's too low.
Yeah, the humidity's too low. The humidity's
but
too
isn't
low.
The music level business is too high. Just the mob? It's basically just the mob. They sign you, they give you a bunch of money, and then you spend your rest of your life paying them back.
It's a shame we don't have a real musician here at this table who could, you know, say that.
Yeah.
Lots of people have said they're basically loan sharks.
Yeah.
That's like you say, they loan you money to make the record, and you end up, you know, paying it back the whole time.
Well, yeah. AFO was trying to buck that and be an independent,
and be
independent, a successful
and
independent,
pay everybody right, and keep their publishing together, and. It was, I think, ultimately, it was successful for the music they put out and the idea of trying to do this.
Well, the records were great.
And the records are fantastic.
Yeah.
Records are real, you know, that Ellis Marsalis record and a lot of their singles and stuff. They weren't just doing, they were doing some jazz, but they also were doing, you know, R&B. They put out, their first single was Barbara George's I Know.
Yeah.
You know, that's right. Put that on today and it's still great.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's still, and some of the other more obscure things are also fantastic, you know.
And you know about all that stuff, of course.
Listen to it a lot.
Right.
Still do. You know, still great stuff.
No, what did you call it? Mixology or
musicology.
Musicology, yeah.
I also did some mixology in my day, too.
Now, when I went to college, it was boozology.
Right.
Which is a whole different, you know, thing.
Yeah.
You know, boozology, mixology.
Well, mixology is when folks decided to get really fancy with it, and instead of getting whatever you got, you know, boozology is when your ingredients are from K&B. Yeah. Mixology is when you're growing your ingredients
now,
in the backyard.
K&B, what is K&B?
Cats and Best Off. The great.
Were you around? K&B would close. What did K&B close?
I think K&B closed before Manny got here. Manny was working at Walgreens at one time.
Yeah.
A lot of Walgreens bought up a lot of the K&B.
K&B, when I moved here, was kind of the local drugstore chain.
Yeah, and must have had 25 of them or something. They were everywhere. Yeah.
And you did a lot of drugs back then.
No more than anybody else.
Oh,
sure.
I mean, didn't we all?
Yeah. Well, what was your drug of choice?
My drug of choice really was probably, you know,
booze.
A little bit of booze here and there.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure. Yeah, we don't need to get any more incriminating than that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you have this thesis on AFO, but then, like, you know, looking at all these other subjects that you've chosen to do these you know, radio documentaries on, you know, like Louis Armstrong, Louis Prima.
Those are actually the exhibits.
Oh,
the exhibits
sorry,
are Louis.
Sorry.
The documentaries have been Lee Dorsey and Jonathan Frelick.
Jonathan Frelick, former guest of ours.
Oh, yeah, you had Frelick on here?
Oh, yeah.
Sweet.
Need to have him on again. We had him on during the pandemic.
Oh, no, you definitely, you know, he is a man who knows many things about many things.
Oh, yeah, no, Jonathan can talk.
Yeah.
And Jonathan, he wants to come on the podcast and start asking me questions.
Of course.
And then he'll go, I should have you on my podcast. And I go, well, ask me. And then he never does.
You know, Guitar Slim, James Black, those are the other documentaries.
Right. Man, such fantastic work. And
thank
that's,
you.
Now, where are those archived at?
Those are all, my brother made a YouTube channel for me, and they are all audio documentaries on the YouTube channel. So just look up David Kunian on YouTube, and they're all there. So.
Okay, cool. Well, I'll put a link in the show notes to all of those,
because,
you know, that work... You know, it's no Troubled Men podcast, but it's very important. Yeah,
yeah. I've always been trying to reach y'all's standard. It's true. You know.
Well, keep thinking.
Keep
reaching lower.
Yeah.
You could do worse.
Yeah, I could dig deep.
So fast forward, you somehow parlay this musicology degree into...
I got this musicology degree, and then they're hiring at the Jazz Museum, at the State Museum. So I become the music curator of the State Museum, and then they decide that they're going, you know, so they can reopen the Jazz Museum.
Right.
And I start putting together exhibits, which is like putting together documentaries, except they're, you know, actually physical things. And start doing ones. I guess the first ones I did one on women in New Orleans jazz. I did another one on Pete Fountain. And then they kind of all start rolling together. I did one for Professor Longhair's Centennial. And
you did some on some other like art, you know, painters of New Orleans.
Did one
on
James
music.
Nicolopoulos. I did another one of Emily Rees and Noel Rockmore.
Mm-hmm.
Emily's a painter in town who paints musicians, fantastic painter, and her dad was Noel Rockmore, who did, the best way to explain it is the ones of all the Preservation Hall musicians, these kind of dark canvases and, you know, guys sitting there. If you've been in Pres Hall, they're in there. You know, you go, oh yeah, those guys kind of thing.
Right. And one that really caught my attention is the one that you did on the great degenerate poet Everett Maddox.
Oh, I did a documentary on Everett. Yeah, that was a blast.
Now, what an interesting character. So any New Orleanians may know him from, there's a plaque of him at the end of the bar at the Maple Leaf.
Yep.
And he, for years and years, decades, had early Sunday, like poetry reading, gathering there. There at the Maple Leaf, and in fact, when I had this guy Kurt Lipschutz on the podcast, who's Chuck Prophet's songwriting partner, and he's a poet, by training and by vocation. And he came here on the podcast, and then he wanted to go see the Maple Leaf and see the plaque for Everett Maddox. Yeah. Now, Everett Maddox would substitute teach at Ben Franklin when I was a student there.
You're kidding.
So you could come in any day and see him nursing a hangover behind the desk.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So what did you learn from Everett Maddox?
Oh, he wouldn't teach anything. Okay. No, he wouldn't try to teach. He would just just do whatever you want. Just keep, be quiet. Oh, and just, I'm going to put my head down on the desk. There we go. Okay, cool.
That sounds typical.
Now, I have a great story I'll tell you after the podcast.
Okay.
But Everett Maddox, yeah. So it must have been fascinating to tell his story, huh?
It was great. And it also, having done ones on Michael Ward and James Booker and Maddox gets me very deep into the Maple Leaf.
Right.
That was always an interesting. And the great thing about hearing Everett Maddox's stories is that, one, they're as wild as any other stories of crazy artists in New Orleans, but he seemed to be a very kind and gentle soul,
Troubled.
Yes, definitely troubled. In fact, you could probably name a podcast after him. And the thing about him is, when you read his poetry, it's deep. It has allusions and it has metaphors. The whole everything poetry should have, but you always know what he's talking about.
Okay.
Sometimes lots of people write poetry and it has all
it's
of that.
It's too opaque.
But you can't quite figure out what they're getting at. Everett's stuff was deep, and also you always knew what he was talking about. And his poetry about New Orleans is as good as anybody else. As good as any kind of art statement about New Orleans.
And what an iconic character, for those that didn't know Everett, he, someone who is a heavy drinker, let me say that. But he would always wear a Brooks Brothers suit and a white Brooks Brothers, Oxford shirt. And he would wear it until it would fall off in rags.
Right.
And then his acolytes would buy him a new set of clothes, and he would never wash it, never launder it.
He'd be sleeping in this.
Wear
thing.
It until it would fall off his body. He was very much had a monkish sort of existence, you know? Anyway,
yeah, one of those. Yeah, Everett Maddox. Go read Everett Maddox. You're better off for it.
Yeah, man. Having someone like you on the show, and I've had a number of people recently. I had Mark Guarino, great writer, author. I've had Michael Tisserin on the show before. Others.
He's a thief, Michael Tisserin.
Ben Sandmel.
Speaking of thieves,
people who are excellent interviewers who have interviewed so many people. And then I have them on this show, and so I think, they don't have Manny, so that's
the secret weapon.
It's not so secret, yeah.
Right.
But I think, is there any question that I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
Well, what about, we're going to get to Chaz Fest.
Yeah.
Chaz
okay,
Fest.
Back to Chaz.
Yeah.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, yeah.
Because you were one of the first promoters of it? I don't know.
I was the first MC. I was the MC for almost all of them and the first MC.
Yes.
Yeah.
For when Alex and Courtney and Daniel all kind of, and I'm forgetting a couple of the,
Jeff Treffinger.
Jeff Treffinger. Yeah. All kind of, got the idea that they could do, they had a space.
They
had the truck farm.
Right. Which was like four backyards that were all communal.
Went all the way in the entire block.
Yeah.
When they first bought those, it was four shotgun doubles that faced St. Claude. And then they had Jeff said when he bought that, they walked in the back and there was a horse grazing.
Chickens. Yeah. They had all sorts.
It was a farm.
It was like a police horse because the police stables were next door. So they didn't have a fence. So
they had the idea after Katrina where, some of them didn't get into Jazz Fest, that they would just, hey, Mom, we'll put on a show.
Right.
And for some, and they kept doing it, even though I think they ever made any money.
It was that Thursday before they had...
It was the Wednesday
between Jazz Fest
weekend.
Where the truck farm, there was locals who didn't get to play Jazz Fest. Yeah. Maybe some of them did. I don't know.
Right. Mostly and bands that weren't
that
playing.
Yeah. That weren't well, playing Jazz
yeah,
Fest.
And they said, we're going to do this.
And yeah. And they got, you know, their friends who were chefs to cook stuff.
Right.
Gianna Satchere came in and cooked some stuff and they had bars.
Helena
and,
set up a bar yeah. from the Mermaid
yeah,
people.
I, yeah. And I remember, I don't know what Jazz Fest it was, but Jeff asked me to do 10 minutes of jokes. And I said, really? Really? You sure you want me to do this? He said, yeah. It was between some circus acrobats and supergroup.
Okay.
And they had a big stage and they had like two little stages.
One smaller stage.
Yeah, one smaller stage. And I said, all right, I'll do it. And I don't
How'd
think Jeff
go?
Remembered my act. I don't know if he ever saw my act, but it was very offensive. Very
as well. It should have been.
It was lots of one-liners. You know, one-liners this, one-liners that, one that kind of stuff. And I'll never forget. My wife and my child, who must have been 18 months at the time, were sitting there watching me, and my kid kept going this, pointing at me. Poppy. And I'm saying jokes like, you know, I'm insulting people now.
Right.
I go, you know, nice chin, lady. When's the last time you saw your breasts? You know, that those kind of jokes, you know.
I don't know what that means.
Getting heckled. I said, this girl's so fat, her parents took her to a fat farm. They turned it into a ranch. You know, those kind of jokes, you know. But I'll never forget. Jeff, who asked me to do this, after I did my 10 minutes or so, and then Supergroup comes on, Jeff comes up to me and goes, you ain't never playing again. But they didn't last that much longer. I think they ended and stuff like that a few years later.
It was a couple years later.
Yeah,
But
had
it was
a good long run.
But
yeah.
Jeff did say, I liked a lot of those jokes.
Okay.
We
got the thumbs up. Can't please everybody.
Yeah, you can't please everyone. No, but he's a good guy.
Oh, yeah.
We should get him on this show.
Yeah. Again, yeah, Jeff's been on the show many, many times. Actually, some Geraniums, that's the band that I would always play with, mm-hmm. Jeff's band, you know, and we were talking before the podcast started, you know, how that was kind of a sacred group for me, you know, that every gig we played felt like a drunken prayer to God with Brendan and Jeff and that band.
Those Uranium shows were so, I mean, you were at this small stage with all of the kind of, you know, and like all of your friends and people who knew every word.
Right.
You know, and beautiful poetry.
Yeah, we're a small stage kind of act.
Yeah.
That's where we want to be.
Yeah. Intimate in that good way.
Yes.
So when did Jazz Fest end? When was the last time they had that?
2019 or something? Was that it?
Before the pandemic or?
Oh, yeah. Because they sold Truck Farm.
Right, they sold it. That's right.
And then so that's when it ended.
And they did one more in 2024 at the Broadside.
Oh, no. So this last year, we had
Tom Thayer did it.
Tom Thayer from formerly of DBA now has New Suit Productions.
Yeah.
And yes, he did Jazz Fest Revisited, When Pigs Fly.
Because
Alex, people would always, Alex McMurray would say, people would come up to him and go, when are you going to do Jazz Fest again? It was so great. You got to find another space and do it. And he'd say, no, I'm not going to do it. You know, When Pigs Fly. Yeah. So ultimately, they had another one. Now that, there's been a couple of days. One was the most recent, or both of the Mermaid reunions. But that Jazz Fest Revisited was of the caliber where I thought, that's one of the most fun days I've had in memory, man, where all those bands were there and all the fans that would show up to those things came out and you were the MC this year. And
it was always a garden party with great drinks and your friends playing and all the bands you want to see.
Yeah, and all the weirdos who Jazz Fest wouldn't book, but some of the coolest bands.
Yeah.
You know, that just It's for Chaz Fest, not Jazz Fest.
Yeah. Chaz Fest, for Washboard Chaz.
Right. Yes, yeah. Who I run into everywhere. I was up in D.C. playing, or in Norfolk, playing with the Iguanas and Sonny Landreth as double bill. And there at Soundcheck, or I'm coming back to play the show, and I'm going, God, that guy sure does look like Washboard Chaz. And then, sure enough, it's him walking up the street because he's in Norfolk with 10 men, you know, playing the next day. And he comes and sits in with us. Well,
now here's a joke.
Okay,
here's
man, he's got a joke. Our man's going to close.
All right. I remember when I was a young man, I went to my grandparents' house for some kind of family activity. And then after dinner, my grandfather brought me up to the attic. And I walked up there with him, and he pulled down this huge case. And in the case was a mermaid. And he said, I want you to take off all your clothes and fuck the mermaid. So I did. My grandfather just watched. He just watched me fucking this mermaid. Then years later, my grandfather died. And I decided to go up to the attic to find that case. I found that case, I pulled it down, and I opened it. And there was a dead monkey with his legs sewn together. You remind me of that dead monkey.
Okay, he didn't see that one coming. All right, well, on that note, David, thank you so much for coming on the podcast,
man. Thank you so much for having me.
I pointed at Renee when I said the monkey.
Okay, I'm
all right, good night,
everybody.
Folks.
Monkey speaks his mind.
Speaks his mind. And thank you for all the work that you do. That you're doing God's work over there at the radio and at the Jazz Museum.
Thank you very much.
And as always, on the Troubled Men podcast, we like to say, trouble never ends.
But the monkey continues.
Vote Manny Chevrolet for mayor.
Good night.
Something sweet about the moonlight. Tell me everything tonight. Tomorrow may not be what we had bargained for. Perhaps we should have chose the other. Tell me everything tonight.